Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour two of four. Eli, let's go.
Clark is from Des Plaines. He's going to try his hand at Bears trivia. Here we go, Clark. You ready?
Yes.
All right. $10 question. In what year did the Bears clinch the NFC North in a Christmas Day game against the Packers?
83.
2005. Thanks for playing, though.
He is the originator of 83 Nation. Luke Stuckmeyer is here in studio with me for this hour. I know that we have turned this into a thing. Wait, let me get the propers out of the way. Luke is an anchor over NBC Sports Chicago. You can watch him there hosting Beer Money and also The Rush that he does every weekday at 5 o'clock. Rotating guests, but usually you and Sierra, isn't it?
It's mostly Sierra and me at 5 o'clock. Facebook Live page. Yeah, so, it's strictly a Facebook show.
Good, which is a lot of fun. You can have a little bit more freedom. And yeah. The feedback of the show is, I'm sure, fun.
We do whatever we want, basically. Today we gave away tickets.
Really?
Yeah, every once in a while we give away something. We really have no rules other than we're supposed to ask a few questions and interact. And we just thought we'd try it out on Facebook. It's been fun so far.
I think that it's been really, really fun and really, really good, too. So Luke's going to hang out with me for a little bit. I saw that you saw on my Instagram my 83 Nation moment on Sunday where I went across the street to go get my wife some coffee, and I got our order, and I was order number 83. So I made sure that I took a picture of that and posted it on Instagram. And thanks to the folks over at Robust Coffee in Woodlawn that were serving it up. So, you know, I like to share. 83 Nation is spread across the nation.
It is.
Have you seen the stuff that Rotowall's been doing?
I know that he does it out in Arizona, and I saw one of the caddies at the Masters was wearing 83 a week ago. I sent that out there. You know, you got to point it out every once in a while to people.
But I mean, Rotowall's doing it on newscasts, man.
I know.
Like, he's going to get in trouble.
I know. They have no idea what he's talking about.
None. And he is looking for every way that he can to try and get that into. So how are things, man? How are you handling it at NBC Sports Chicago, this kind of start-stop thing that's going on with the Cubs?
It's been bizarre, right? I mean, we've had some weird baseball seasons here, and not that cold weather is unique this year, because it's not, but it's been way worse, and it's just really, I can't evaluate the players and say, oh, Quintana's been off to a bad start, or Darvish has been off to a bad start. Because how are these guys even holding on to the ball when they're throwing it? Saturday's game was so ridiculous that how could you evaluate anything from that game? I can't blame the Braves for throwing the ball all over the field, and I can't blame them for walking like four guys in a row either.
I had fun watching the end of that game. I was flipping around watching the NBA playoffs, checking in here and there on what was going on in the NHL playoffs. And, you know, I'm getting the alerts on the at-bat, and I'm like, oh. Oh, the Cubs are coming back. Let me flip over and see what's going on. But it was a circus. Like it was a clown convention that was going on. With you're seeing guys that just they're. I give the Cubs credit. I give them this credit. It's clear that they didn't want to be out there, and they could have very easily said, "We're going to take this 10-2 L, and we're going to go home." But they didn't. They stuck it out, and when they saw an opportunity to win the game, they went for it, and they had great at-bats at the end, and they're taking walks because no one had command because the ball was slick and you can't throw it right. So I give them credit for not completely packing it in. And my entertainment value for that 30 minutes of that inning, that half inning, was high. I thought it was great. But overall, it's a real struggle to enjoy baseball so far.
I mean, I don't mind watching it on TV, but I would hate watching it at the ballpark. And when Rizzo said yesterday, talking about playing less games, he is right about the fact that what is so fun about going to a game, sitting in a parka, having rain blow in your face, and basically freezing as if you're at a Bears game but you're watching guys play baseball. There is no fun to that.
No.
There is no fun to that. So I get what he's saying.
Do you remember the worst like weather game that you covered?
Worst weather? Are you talking just strictly baseball or
no,
another sport?
No, whatever. You cover a bad football game or soccer game when you're in college.
Worst weather game I ever covered. The worst sporting event I ever covered was some World Cup ski jumping up in Marquette, Michigan, and it was like 35 below, and I had a camera on my shoulder at the bottom of a ski jump, and my fingertips completely froze, and when I came in, my skin was so frostbitten that my face was, I kid you not, like, it was my skin was black. It was frozen solid, and the lady's like, you need to come inside immediately. So that's the worst sporting event I've ever covered.
Oh, my God. Wait, stop there. I want to. So, what happens when your face is that frozen?
Yeah.
How do you recover?
I actually did the news that night, but they sent me to a dermatologist. I put some creams on. Nothing really like off the charts crazy. But now, like if I'm out in the sun, or if it's cold, or if I'm just warm in a room, my skin will still to this day. It gets way more flush than it would have prior to that, is what I was
told. Wow.
Yeah, my fingers were really frostbitten.
So,
like, my skin peeled and everything off them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So that's the worst one that you...
That was the worst event I can think of. Football I did. You remember the Monday night football game? It was Chiefs and Seahawks at Arrowhead. And it rained so hard that the field was under... I don't know, foot and a half of water.
Yeah.
And they stopped the game at like halftime, and we were under the tunnel, and the players didn't know if they were coming back on. So everybody was, they didn't go back to the locker room. Everybody just stood in the tunnel, and we were like, I don't know, calf deep in water, holding electronic equipment at the time, which wasn't a great idea.
Because the fields usually drain that way.
Right.
Like, that's where the crown kind of sends the water.
Yeah.
So you're just standing there in water the whole time.
Pouring rain, and it was lightning at Arrowhead. So it was dangerous to be out there, let alone holding a video camera over your shoulder. Probably wasn't, it's like a lightning rod on your shoulder standing there.
When you look back at the days of when you were a one-man band, As a reporter, as you're working your way to a market like Chicago, do you miss it? Do you romanticize about it?
I only paused for dramatic reasons. No, would be the answer to that. Not at all. I looked at my first job. I just was looking back at my first job this week because of all the snow.
Where was it?
It was Marquette, Michigan, which is, there's the hand of Michigan, and then there's the top of Michigan, the other piece over the Mackinac Bridge. So that Marquette, Michigan is not where Marquette plays, which is what most people think. That's Milwaukee. This is 3.5 hours straight north of Green Bay. And then it continues for another 2 hours north of that town. So you covered from the Mackinac Bridge down to Green Bay, out to Minnesota. And they just had 32 inches of snow last week.
Oh, my
goodness. Last weekend, I'm sorry, 32 inches of snow.
How long were you there?
I was there three and a half years.
What's the craziest story that you covered when you were there?
That's tough. Craziest story. I covered the third annual outhouse races. that was out there in Ontonagon, Michigan there. The third annual. That was I did dog sled races, ski jumping, did series on deer hunting.
I was going to ask, because I would imagine there are probably some people that probably wanted to take you hunting.
Yeah. And it was right out of the gate. I had never gone hunting in my life. And they're like, sweeps is coming up. You're going to do a 3-part series on deer hunting and deer camp. The kids get off 2 weeks of school for deer season up there.
Are you serious?
2 weeks. It's like Christmas break up there.
Wow.
And it was brutal. Cold, like snow up over your knees already by November 2nd.
Did you even have the clothes to do job?
No. You had to go buy the stuff. And you didn't have the money to go buy it, but so you called mom and dad and were like, hey, how about a little
Christmas?
Little something. I need real boots. Like, the boots we wear here don't cut it.
So did you learn did they do the fish out of water stuff where you learn how to shoot a gun or you learn how to ice fish or anything like that?
No, I really didn't. I got involved in some of that because I did news and weather first because I couldn't get a sports job. out of school. And so I finally took a news producing job, and then I did news reporting, and then I was the weather guy for a year. And then finally at the very end, they're like, okay, we'll let you do sports. So I never really did the crazy. I mean, I did. You had to come up with just ridiculous stuff. I mean, when I think of some of the stories, we were doing stories on Big Boy's anniversary and, like, I mean, stuff that was not news, not even remotely news. I told Sierra today on camera that I did the world's largest sauna up there because they have all these Finnish American people in northern Michigan. In fact, they had a show called Suomikutsu. It was the only Finnish speaking show on TV in America, and it had been on air for like 30 years.
Get out.
Yeah. So when Lauri Markkanen came in, I came up to him and I said, Suomikutsu. And he looked at me like,
how do you know that?
And that's all I know. I mean, that's literally the only line I know in Finnish. And that's Finland Calling was the name of the show. But it was
wow.
It was on every Sunday for a half hour, completely spoken in Finnish.
How does one lead into that and then come out of a show like it's almost like yeah. are you going to just act like nothing just happened? Like you
right.
come on with your program after a half an hour of Finnish conversation.
Right.
How do you even you just ignore it? You just move on and just act like nothing happened.
I think the follow up was a fishing show.
Okay.
So I think they went from the Finnish speaking show straight into Buck Lavasser's Great Outdoors.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Someone just said that you had nice pronunciation. So
Finns appreciate that, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, you know, I was one of them for 4 years.
So all right. So give me the trajectory from where you started to where, of course, you're here now.
Right.
But what was the next job and the next job and the next job?
So Marquette, Michigan was the first three and a half years. I finally got into sports at the end, paid to leave the station before I left, which is a whole nother story. But I paid to leave the station.
You had to buy your contract out?
But I didn't have a contract. That's the crazy part.
How much did you pay him?
A couple thousand dollars.
To be like, I just want to be done with you?
Yes, just to get it. Like, it ended up being a story where a general manager at the first station and second station that I was going to didn't like each other, and I got caught between the two. And so I had accepted the job at the second place in Lincoln, Nebraska, and the two GMs didn't like each other. And so in order to leave and have a job at either one of the places, I wrote a guy a personal check.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was making $13,500 a year. So
oh.
It was, you know, you were pretty much, you definitely paycheck to paycheck. I think my paychecks were like $500.
I think back to when I first started in radio, and it's funny because Sierra actually brought this up on Twitter this past weekend when she was talking about there was a young broadcaster who was struggling with the idea of working for Sinclair and someone said, you know, you can't take that job and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And Sierra made the point of, you know, it's not like these jobs are available everywhere. Everyone has their own choice and it's, you're taking a $23,000 job.
Right.
Probably. I think about my first job here at the Score, first full-time job here. I made $23,500. When I became a full-time executive producer of like a real day part. And I keep thinking back and I'm like, how did I make it? Like, how yeah. did I live?
Right.
Like how did I live like from day to day? How were, cause I had an apartment. I had a car. How in the world did all that stuff get paid? And I'm sure that you probably like, can you think about like what that was like when you're making $13,500? Like what was, how were you eating? What type of place were you staying in?
Okay, so my apartment, I had a one-bedroom apartment. It had shag carpet, and it was, of the reporters at the station, I lived in a palace.
Nice.
Like I was the place to go hang out, right? Because I actually had a window air conditioning unit, which up there is unheard of. So for the week where it was 80 degrees, everybody came to my house.
The week.
Yeah. But the apartment was like maybe $300 a month, $250 a month, I think. So, I mean, the apartment wasn't very expensive. And I had, you know, the old school, you know, back then, if you had like a Jordan poster or something, it'd be like the thing you'd get at Walgreens and you put the little
thumbtacks on it.
The plastic strips down the side.
Oh, yeah.
You would piece it together. So I had a couple of those hanging on the walls. And my parents came to see me the first time after the first winter that I'd been there. And my mom was just kind of dusting around the apartment. I was a single guy. I didn't clean the place very well. She's kind of cleaning the thing off. She takes this Jordan poster down off the wall. Behind it is white. Where the poster was, the frame around it is like yellow and black. It's iron mining towns up there. And you would feel the
soot.
The soot and you would feel the explosions. The apartment building would shake every once in a while. So I had iron mining dust on the walls of the apartment that I was living in for 3 years. So if I don't have black lung by now, I'm hoping I'm not going to get it.
Okay, that's good.
That's my goal.
I'm glad that you don't have black lung. So you paid to get out.
I did,
And you make it to Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right.
How long were you there?
I was in Lincoln, Nebraska for another 3 years. So I covered Mike Brown when Mike Brown was there.
The black shirts.
Yeah, Amon Green. They had some pretty good players. Grant Wistrom, Jason Peter. They won a national championship, the one 97 when I was there.
So when you're in a town like that covering sports, is it all Nebraska football?
Yes, everything. That's the reason I went to the Kansas City Chiefs Seattle Seahawks game, because Amon Green at that time was playing for the Seahawks and some other Nebraska players were playing for the Chiefs at the time. So it was former teammates meeting on a Monday night football game.
Is there anything else?
No. They have a minor league baseball team, and they have a beautiful stadium, but in reality, it's Nebraska anything. Their volleyball team.
Really good.
Really good.
They just won
another national championship, but they sell out their Coliseum to see that. It's a hotter ticket than really even the football games because it's such a small arena. The people, it's a whole state. They have nothing else to do there. I can only compare Lincoln, Nebraska to Green Bay.
That's fair.
It's a whole state rooting for one team, just like this is. They don't have any professional team. That's the difference. At least in Wisconsin, they also have the Brewers and the Bucks to sort of like. This is only the University of Nebraska, and if it's not Nebraska, they don't really care.
Wow.
Yeah, they're real diehard.
I can imagine. And I can also imagine that puts you in a real interesting spot as the sportscaster, because people, they genuinely really care about how something is being covered.
That is the first time that where you had to weigh, at least in my career, the balance of, I think I'm supposed to be impartial, but nobody in this town's going to allow me to be impartial. Like, nobody. The day I stepped into that newsroom in Lincoln, Nebraska, the first thing the news director did was give me a company credit card and told me to go down to the bookstore and buy 5 Nebraska polo shirts, because we could only wear Nebraska gear and red to cover the games on Saturdays.
That's amazing.
Like, it wasn't like a conversation like, I really don't want to wear Nebraska gear. I'm not a Nebraska fan. It was, you will go down, you will get 5 shirts, and you will wear them to every game.
What's that like when you have the realization of
that's real business?
Right.
You know?
Right. That's the difference between journalism as a practicum and journalism as theory.
That's true.
So when you come to that realization of, wow, there goes my objectivity, like right out the window from the moment I step in, how does that feel?
It wasn't that hard, Lawrence, because already my credibility was gone because I'd done the third annual outhouse races 2 years prior to that. So, you know, when you're covering people pushing each other in porta potties down a snow covered street, and that's your lead story of the newscast, you've pretty much jumped the shark.
It's hard to go back. You can't be Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, it's made doing beer money very, very easy for me.
Yeah, we need to talk more about beer money. I saw something on Twitter the other day where it may have been like out west somewhere. The winds were like super high, like maybe in Colorado, where there was like a porta potty just going down the street. And that's what I thought of when you talked about the – and it was – like careening down the street like someone was operating it with a remote control. Amazing, amazing stuff. All right, we need to take a break. More with Luke Stuckmeyer coming up after a quick timeout, and we will talk to him about beer money. There's going to be a special beer money next week that I am kind of involved in, sort of.
Ooh, you might have to play.
I would like to play, even though, I mean, I would like to play. So when you do your All-Star edition, I would like to be on that. We'll talk about that next here on The Score.
$100 question. I need you to name the three number one draft picks during the Theo Epstein era that have already made their major league debut with the Cubs.
Albert Almora. You know what? I'm going to be f***ing the years. Oh, sorry.
We got to cut that out.
Edit that one. I'm going to be screwed on the years.
PG show.
That's right. Beer money on ABC Sports Chicago. Luke Stuckmeyer has to deal with some of that going on. Luckily, the show is not live. Is it ever live? You never do live.
We have never done live. That seems dangerous.
It seems real dangerous.
Yeah. Especially we like to walk that fine line, but not that fine, Lawrence.
I agree. This segment being brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring with Indeed.com? You can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. And if you need a legal advice or a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to CBSChicago.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's CBSChicago.com/legal advice. Luke Stuckmeyer of NBC Sports Chicago is hanging out here with me for the hour. He's nice enough to do that. Beer money next week. Buffalo Wings and Rings.
I'm in. You're going to be there.
I am. I'm going to be doing some draft coverage with Alex Brown there. We're going to have a good time. I asked Kelly about this when she was on the show on Monday. Where do you get your cool t-shirts at?
I've gotten them from all over. The ones that I've tried to wear. Urban Game Day was a place that I got a few. Sometimes I'll just go online.
Okay.
The 83 Nation, I'm not sure who was exactly selling that, but I found that online, the 83 Nation shirt.
It wasn't us.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm just saying, I don't know where it came from.
But you're happy that you got it.
But I have an 83 Nation shirt.
That's quality.
And then somebody pointed out to me that there was the old Stuckey's restaurant, gas station place, that they were actually still selling merchandise. So then I found them online, and they hooked me up with a couple shirts.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a contestant on beer money that surprised you in a good way?
No, we've had some, you know, it's not fun if everybody's really, really bad, and it's not fun if everybody's really, really good. That's what I've learned after, I don't know what this is. This is like maybe 8 seasons, 9 seasons or whatever we're on now. Sure, that's when we did the All-Stars. We had some people that were really, really great. Gabriel is the kid that won the All-Stars tournament. He's autistic, and he knows his White Sox stuff to the T. And he's awesome. And when he got up at the end of that show and was like, hey, we're all in this together. I'm autistic. If I can win this, you can win it. We all kind of looked around like, well, I didn't expect this out of Beer Money All-Stars, but that was a really cool way to end it, showing that, like, people have different things in their life, and this kid has dealt with some stuff in his life, but he still loves his White Sox. He still loves sports, and he knew his stuff.
That's fun.
So I'd say Gabriel would be number one.
That's a heartwarming story. Like, those are the types of things that you love to cover.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite story outside of that one that you've covered in your career? It could be news, too, if you want. You don't have to stick to sports.
Here's my problem, Lawrence. Grobber, for instance, can remember everything he's done in his entire life, right?
That's true.
He can tell you what he had for lunch in 1973 on May 3rd. I can't tell you what I had for lunch 2 days ago.
You know what's interesting about reporters in sports in particular? I don't know if it's the same with news, that we have to be experts on things like very quickly. It's like cramming for an exam. But with that is us purging it from our brains.
When it's over, it's done.
It's done, and then you move on to the next thing that you're going to do and become an expert on that.
I mean, coolest story. I grew up a Cubs fan although I went to both games. I went to Cubs and Sox as a kid. So the world, covering the World Series, that was top of the mountain for me. It's the whole reason I got into it. Traveling around with Ryne Sandberg when he was in the minor leagues and a manager and was trying to get into baseball for like a week was pretty cool. We ended up somehow at the White House halfway through it. He got a call from George W. Bush and was like, "Hey, will you and John Smoltz come out?" And Ryne was like, "I'm going to the White House tomorrow. Are you coming or not?" I was like, "Okay. Yeah, like, can I?" Sure. So that was fun. Covering the Blackhawks was fun here. Smaller market stuff. I covered the Spurs in the NBA Finals. That was pretty, like, in the peak of their success with Duncan and Robinson. And covered David Robinson's last game, who might be the classiest athlete I've ever covered in any sport.
What about him did you like?
He was very real. He was very professional. For instance, Tim Duncan he's just naturally a very quiet athlete.
Introverted guy.
Yeah, very introverted. Didn't want to, if he didn't have to do one interview, he wouldn't have done a single one, and doesn't ever want to talk about himself. But David Robinson brought him along, and he said to Tim, "After every game, you're going to do one-on-one interviews. And no matter we win or lose, you will make yourself available, just like I will, just like Avery Johnson will, just like Steve Kerr will, Manu Ginobili. You'll be available. As long as I'm on this team, you'll be available after the game. That's what you have to do." And so Tim Duncan followed along with it. Now, Tim didn't always do that after David Robinson left, but he set a precedent for that team even before Duncan got there. Now, they won a lot of championships because of Tim Duncan. But David Robinson, first of all, he served his country when he could have been making millions of dollars. He went to Navy. He agreed to go to Navy, and he stayed at Navy. I watched him when he was there. We see a lot of athletes in Chicago that do great things. Anthony Rizzo does amazing things in this city. David Robinson at the time, and this was 15 years ago, he gave, I believe it was $13 million of his own money after he had finished playing to start Carver Academy, a private school that would bring in kids from all over the city in San Antonio, all backgrounds, all financial situations, and they were going to get the best education that they could get in the state of Texas. And he didn't just put the money in, then he would show up to the school and watch these kids every day. So it was like, some guys give their money and then move along, which is also, don't get me wrong, still wonderful. Anybody that's giving millions of dollars, no matter how much money you make, is still very admirable. But the fact that he followed up and then wanted to make sure that these kids were doing the right thing when they got there and saw it firsthand, I always respected him greatly, whether he was on a basketball court or not.
Has Greg Popovich always been like what we see now?
He's softer than he was.
Really?
Yes. Yes, Pop is softer. So the first time when I got to San Antonio, I was fresh off of Lincoln, Nebraska, and he does have a soft side. I was terrified because I had heard all these stories about Popovich is a nightmare. And we got a one-on-one interview at 6 o'clock before every game for your local news with either Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Avery Johnson, Bruce Bowen did some, or they would throw Pop to you sometimes. So the first game I went to was going to be Lakers, Spurs, Shaq, Kobe were in town, and they throw me Greg Popovich for my minute and a half live interview on the sportscast. No, it wasn't live. This was taped. Taped to look live on the air. And I finished the whole thing. It goes perfectly. I'm proud of myself. I get done and I send it back to studio and I say, "Luke Stuckmeyer, 1011 News." And my heart just drops because 1011 News was my station in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Oh, no.
And I've just ruined a minute and a half interview with Greg Popovich where he actually answered the three questions that I threw to him. And Pop stops after reading and he says, "What the heck is 1011 News?" And I'm like, "It's my old station. I can't believe I didn't. He's like, "Let's do it again." Greg Popovich then redid the whole minute and a half interview with different answers to the same questions that I did because I just memorized three questions because I was terrified.
And he let you stick the landing.
Now, that said, at practice or during games, he can be you know, it doesn't matter what question you ask. If he's in a bad mood, he's in a bad mood, and he's going to pick on somebody. Like,
that's a cool story.
He made me a tough reporter in that I really, an athlete couldn't say something to me now where I'd be like totally frazzled or, you know, like upset by, because I've dealt with Popovich for 3 years. And when you go to, after about, you know, a month of practice with Greg Popovich, you learn to take it with a grain of salt. And I will say, when I came here and was with the Bulls at a shoot around, Pop is the first guy that came over when I was first here in Chicago and said, hello, how are you doing? How are things going with the new station? Like, he can be a very, very nice guy, which is what makes the other stuff so crazy. Like, he's so intense and out there that he's absolutely terrifying to some people. I don't know if I was ever terrified other than that first interview.
That's great stuff. That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a break. One more segment with Luke Stuckmeyer. Check him out on The Rush every day, Monday through Friday, I should say. 5 o'clock, he and Sierra Santos do a great job on that. Beer Money, of course, is going to be a special Beer Money. Is it Wednesday and Thursday or just Thursday?
I believe it is just Thursday for that special show we have.
Next Thursday, Buffalo Wings and Rings. Yes. You can check out Beer Money and maybe come be a contestant. Come win some money. Thanks to Luke Stuckmeyer and the folks at NBC Sports Chicago. Back after this on The Score. I am hanging out with Luke Stuckmeyer of NBC Sports Chicago, host of Beer Money, host of The Rush, Monday through Fridays, 5 o'clock on Facebook, Facebook Live with Sierra Santos. I have a text message for you.
Oh, boy.
This from a first-time texter, long-time listener, who wants me to ask about Stick It to Stucky.
Okay, now so we wanted to go back to worst stories I've ever done. Is that what we're doing?
I was just told
Stick It to Stucky was up there.
Stick It to Stucky is what I was supposed to ask about. That's all.
Sarah Lauk used to make me do this segment called Stick It to Stucky, and people could challenge me to do anything. This was like 7 or 8 years ago, and it finally, and I almost died playing hockey against these kids that were running me all over because I can't skate. But then they put me in one of those whirly ball carts, and I wasn't strapped in yet. I was just sitting on the whirly ball cart, and somebody was going to test the GoPro to see if it worked, and they shoved me full speed into a wall, which catapulted me off the car, almost knocked out all my teeth. And then I looked down, I was like, oh, my shin is killing me. And I pulled up my jeans on the air, you know, for the story, like rolling tape. And it's the size of a softball. Like, it's inflamed like this massive red. I had to have the thing drained with a needle from a doctor. And for like 4 years, I had a scar that was like 4 inches. And I was like, you know what? Stick It to Stucky is officially dead. So that was the end of that segment, was when I had the needle stuck in for draining the blood out of my shin.
How do you then go back to discussing, how does your boss then go back to asking you to do another segment after you do that?
I pretty much went in and said, that was the last one, unless you're going to pay for all the medical bills and give me something else for, like,
wow.
How about I do Beer Money, I think was the conversation.
See?
I don't know what it was. I just know that Stick It to Stucky was done, and I believe the next one was done by David Kaplan.
Stick It to Kaplan?
That didn't last very long
either.
Stick
It to Sparkles.
Yeah.
That's how that works. Is there something in sports that you haven't covered that you would like to cover?
I have never covered a Super Bowl. I've done NBA Finals. I've done World Series. I've done Final Fours. I did the Kentucky Derby with.
What's longest, that like? I've never done the Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky Derby. So, I don't know how much of this I should or should not reveal. I'll tell you that I was not credentialed to cover the Kentucky Derby. I was told I was going to be credentialed, but something came up very late, and they're like, you're going to cover the Kentucky Derby. And it was like 24 hours notice. So I flew, went to the Kentucky Derby. I had the flu. I mean, the full-on, the sweats, the chills, and I'm sitting in this hotel room in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be the worst. I still don't know if I have a credential, and I'm by myself. And I'm supposed to meet a photographer at – long story short, I snuck into the Kentucky Derby because they didn't have a credential. The credential was on the infield. And at that time, I actually snuck my way into the Kentucky Derby without a credential.
What was your method?
I mean, cash played a large part in it, but just the money that I had in my pocket, which was not very much. So I got into the Kentucky Derby, and it was the year that Giacomo won, and it was a 50-1 long shot. So all I can tell you is that when I got through these tents where I was trying to get to this infield, there were people passed out everywhere. Like, I've never seen so many drunk and intoxicated people, not even at the old Irish, Southside Irish parades, have I seen this many people just completely out of it. And as I stood there, there was one tripod in the infield, and this guy's like, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm looking for the Fox camera. He's like, oh, Tom? Yeah, I'm Tom. So of all the people I found that one guy, and I walked in, and I had like, I don't know what the number was. I think it was like $5. I literally had $5 left in my pocket, and I put money down because my buddy's, one of my buddy's last names is DiGiacomo. So I put $5 to show, and I won like over $100, and then I had a couple mint juleps on the way home, but I was miserable. It was outrageously hot. I had the flu, and it was out there. Let me put it that way.
Would you say that that's something that if you get the chance to cover it, you should cover, or is that a stay away from covering it if you can?
No, it was pretty cool. Like, I wish I was actually there with a crew. It was pretty – everybody's dressed up, having a good time. I think that would be an event. Wimbledon's another one that and there's no way I'm ever going to cover it, but – Wimbledon, the Masters?
That would be...
Either one of those would be pretty cool to cover, I would think. But, I mean, Super Bowls. If the Bears could get back to a Super Bowl, that would be... I never thought I'd see the Cubs in the World Series or the White Sox in the World Series, but I did.
I don't know if I've ever had more fun doing this job than the week that the Bears were in the Super Bowl. Like, we went down... We spared no expense. The whole station went down to Miami. I was there for 9 days because Zach and I were the beat reporters. Yeah. So we had the chance to cover it. It was amazing. And Eli's telling me to tell the Prince story. I'm not going to tell the Prince story.
The Prince story?
Oh, all right. I tell the story all the time. Thanks a lot, Eli. Okay. So Friday before the Super Bowl, the person performing at the Super Bowl has a press conference. And we're exhausted. Like, Zach and I have been there since before the teams got there. We split the two teams up. Since he's the sideline reporter, or was the sideline reporter, he got the Bears, I got the Colts. So I was hauling back and forth between Miami and Fort Lauderdale every day. So we're exhausted. Like, Friday's a great day to cover the Super Bowl because you get the two coaches. The rest of the team is off limits. They do it early. Like, it's like 8:30. So they had Dungy and Lovey there talking. That's where, you know, they had them. They both were touching the trophy, and everyone was like, oh, can't believe they're touching the trophy. So there's a dry erase board outside telling you who was going to be at Radio Row that day and who was going to be in the event center. And it was like 1 o'clock, Prince press conference. And I was like, okay, I have to see how this is going to work. How in the world is Prince going to take questions from people? A man who's completely private. They cleared out the bathrooms. You weren't allowed to go to the bathrooms while Prince was in the building. Prince comes out there. There's a room of about 150 media members that are there. Prince is on stage. He says, contrary to your beliefs, I will take your questions.
That's pretty good.
This guy in the back raises his hand and starts asking Prince a question. Prince turns his back to the stage, starts playing. He and his band play for 25 minutes. He said, see y'all at the Super Bowl, and walked off. I got to see a private Prince concert.
With 149 other people.
It was amazing. Like, and we were all, like, every media member was just standing there going, what just happened? Like, Did that just happen?
And that was before everybody was recording everything on their cell phone.
Absolutely.
And you, I mean, now today you would have been periscoping that.
There was a video. There's a video of it on. I've seen it on YouTube of the performance. But I mean, it was. You're stunned. You're absolutely stunned, and I'm sure that's what he was going for. I got to see Prince twice that week up close.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, that's the Prince story.
And then it rained at the Super Bowl. And
as he's playing Purple Rain.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. It was, and that halftime show was just incredible. It was so incredible. Now, in retrospect, I've talked to Bears players that were like, man, I really wanted to see the halftime show.
That's what happened.
No.
They were thinking about Prince the whole time.
No, Rex is what happened. That is what happened for sure. Luke, this was great, man.
That was fun.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, and I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you next week. Next Thursday night, Buffalo Wings and Rings. You guys are going to be there with beer money starting at 5 o'clock-ish.
Yeah, 5:30.
So if you want to be on Beer Money, come to Buffalo Wings and Rings next Thursday night, and Luke is going to be there. Have you picked out your shirt yet?
No. I didn't have any. We've already done one episode this season. I didn't have anything special, so I might have to come up with something by then.
You got to step it up, man. You can't let Kelly have all the fun.
I'm going to have to dig around. I'm going to have to find something good.
Where can people watch you?
NBC Sports Chicago. You can watch me on In the Loop. You can watch me on The Rush on Facebook Live. You can watch me on Beer Money. What else we got? Twitter, Instagram, the works.
Where are you on Twitter?
At Luke Stuckmeyer. Instagram is at Luke _ Stuckmeyer. Somebody must have just the at Luke Stuckmeyer.
Someone stole it from you.
Yeah, some poser out there.
When you were in Lincoln, Nebraska.
didn't exist back then.
They were like, I want to be him on all platforms.
That's when Facebook was first starting in Lincoln, Nebraska.
I know, that's
a long time ago.
It was. I remember I didn't want to get on Facebook, and it turns out I was right. Turns out I was completely right about that. Luke, thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Luke Stuckmeyer, check him out on NBC Sports Chicago. When we come back, a friend of the show has stopped back by the show. We're going to talk with her about the two pieces that she wrote that are incredible. One of them has to do with the legacy of Larry Doby. The other has to do with the White Sox cap and its effect on popular culture. We'll do that next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.